Hey, Freight Tribe. In today's episode, we're joined by Jeff Lerner. We cover it all. We talk about pizza, his love of sports, his years at Google, and all the stuff we can learn from him there. That was fun. And also how he decided to, you know, casually write a book when his family was away on vacation. So cool. And last but not least, we get to learn more about what he's currently doing at Flock Freight as the Vice President of Marketing. All right, I hope you enjoy. Without further ado, let's get after it. Good morning, good morning. Welcome to the Freight Tribe. Thank you for joining us. Today, we're going to be talking to Jeff Lerner, the Vice President of Marketing for Flock Freight. What I'm hoping that we can get is his thoughts, his mindset on just diverse experience. He started with Google, and now he found his way to our crazy corner of the world, the freight and logistics industry. So we'd love to get his mindset and see what we could learn from him, what we could copy from his experiences. So Jeff, without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to everybody. Thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure, J-Man. How you doing?
Doing really good. So as we usually like to kick off in the show, humanize the talent a little bit, make you sound like a circus animal.
There you go.
Where'd you grow up, Jeff?
I grew up in New York, about 20 minutes outside Manhattan.
So then where do you lie? Everyone from New York has some strong feelings on sports teams. Where's your allegiances?
I have very strong opinions and feelings. You know, I'm a big Mets fan. I'm a Giants fan. I'm an Islanders fan. Basketball, I mean, I guess I'm a Knicks fan, although that's kind of painful to admit, you know, over the last, you know, couple decades. But yeah. certainly very strong opinions when it comes to those choices.
Yes, no, I really appreciate the East Coast passion for sports.
Yes,
I love
for
it.
Sure.
And you know, on it, that's the not the I almost said the original, but really, that's such passionate fans for the brand, for the logo.
Yeah.
So I imagine that has to resonate with you on in your marketing side of the brain.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You don't. You know, you realize that like certain elements of the brand of the sports team that you love sticks with you in ways which you never imagine. You know, I sit here now all the time with two little kids, and even when I'm looking to do something cool with them and we're talking about colors, like my mind navigates towards this blue and orange because, you know, that's the Mets, that's the Islanders, you know, that's the Knicks. So like it's just, you know, somehow ingrained in me that like that color combination of blue and orange like means something to me.
Yeah, that's a good point. What do you have like a pivotal sports memory in your mind? Painful or good?
I have a lot of painful sports memories, especially being a Mets fan. You know, probably my greatest sports memory is when I worked at Google, the NFL was one of my clients, and having conversations with them throughout, you know, one of the football seasons, I'd always said, hey, man, I'd love to go to a Super Bowl. Sure. My girlfriend at the time was a big Patriots fan. And of course she was like, hey, if the Patriots go to the Super Bowl, you know, I want to go. And I said, of course, but if the Giants go to the Super Bowl, like I have to take my buddies because we go to Giants games together. Well, sure enough, the Giants end up playing the Patriots in the Super Bowl. I ask my buddy if he wants to go. He, for some reason, said no. And so, yeah, I mind blown. And so I asked, you know, I said to my girlfriend, hey, you know what? Like, yeah, by all means, you know, come to the Super Bowl. So we went down to Arizona, watched the Giants, you know, win that Super Bowl with that last second heroic helmet catch. And, you know, I ended up marrying her probably because she was so happy seeing how happy I was that the Giants won, as much as she was disappointed that the Patriots
lost. That's legit.
She was just like enjoying the moment of like my appreciation, my love. I may or may not have shed a tear, you know, just seeing that all and being there. So yeah, so, you know, I had to marry her.
That is a legit test of a partner. Yeah. That's a ride or die right there.
Exactly.
Oh man, Dave, I'll never forget that Tyree catch. I mean, that's one of the amazing moments in sports.
That it is. And like every time that they replay that Super Bowl on TV, I make sure I sit the kids down and say, guys, let's watch this. You know, let's, you know, that's our battle, is we're always debating whether they're Giants fans or Patriots fans. For me, it's not a choice. Like, they're Giants fans.
That's, you know, awesome.
But, you know, it's part of our relationship for sure.
Favorite toy as a child?
Man, do you know those? It was like, I can't remember the name of it, maybe Labyrinth or something like that. That kind of like box with the marble that you had to like move the levers to like,
yeah,
move, and you'd have,
yeah, it was like a wooden box.
Yeah, and you had to get the marble like all the way around without it falling in all the holes. I loved that thing. I would sit there for hours like trying to get it from start to finish without falling down all of those, you know, little holes in between. And I mean, I'm sure I had other toys and things and Legos and all the typical toys of childhood, but that thing just always stood out to me as a really cool toy that I enjoyed playing with.
That's awesome. Yeah, I wonder what happened to those. I feel like when I was younger, I saw those around a lot, and it would have the little silver ball like marble.
Yep.
Yeah. I'll check that out.
I know. Now that you asked, like, I feel like I have to go on Amazon or whatever it is and try and find one.
Yes. So then what's a, let's go teenage years. All right. What's a memory from middle school or high school time that you find yourself reflecting on a lot in your professional life?
You know, my grandmother was a guidance counselor in the middle school, you know, in the district where I lived. And I remember probably, so it may have been like right, like a year or two before I went to middle school. So I was probably, you know, 12, you know, 11, 12 or something at the time. We were at my grandmother's house over the summer, you know, having a barbecue like we always did. And she had note cards with every incoming student's name and like something about them. And she would have me quiz her. And I was always like, what are you doing? Like, it's summertime. Like, what? And she's like, I want the kids, when they show up at school, I want to know who they are before they have to like tell me who they are, what, you know, like something about them. Like, I want to have like an understanding of them beforehand, because I want them to feel welcome, to feel secure, to, you know, and that stuck with me. I mean, obviously it's a little different in, you know, what I do compared to what she was doing, but it's this idea, this concept of, you know, always trying to remember names, to remember something about an individual. If you're going to go meet with somebody that you haven't met with, like, do a little research, you know, figure out something about them. You know, it's better to meet someone for the first time, be like, oh, hey, yeah, so-and-so, like, you know, I read about you in this, or, you know, something that indicates like you've taken the time to show interest in them, because that to me is what builds connections and relationships. So that's always kind of been part of who I am, is like, I don't want to show up cold and be like, oh, who are you? Tell me something about yourself. Like, you know, I want to have a background in my head first.
That's fantastic. And I imagine, and we'll get to this a little later, that had to be pivotal in being in your mind when you wrote your book as well. Now I'm getting a little context as I learned about you. This is, yep, fantastic. So then let's end on, before we get into some meat and potatoes, let's go to, this might get real controversial, I don't know. Where is the best slice of pizza?
I mean, you know, I'm a big believer in kind of all pizza is good pizza. You know, it's kind of one, like, even when it's bad, it's still better than most other foods.
The superfood.
Yeah. You know, I also believe that, you know, any pizza, any sized pizza can be a personal pizza if you really put your heart into it. So, you know,
absolutely.
You know, yeah. There's no limits on like a personal pizza is only, you know, yay big. I mean, I'm a New Yorker, like, you know, a thin crust, you know, good form. I want my pizza where I can fold it and it doesn't flop over. Like, that to me is, you know, quality pizza.
All right. So that's the test. Okay.
Yeah.
That, noted. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's few things in life as amazing as just a nice slice.
Yeah. Simple, you know, like, it's really like three ingredients. It's not that difficult, but like, man, a good pizza, like, it makes me feel good.
Nice. So then that begs the follow-up then. Is that what a real slice of pizza is? Pepperoni, or is it cheese? What about when people throw the kitchen, everything but the kitchen sink on it? Are you a supporter of that?
I am a supporter of all of it. Where I kind of start questioning it is when you get to the pineapple. You know, like, I get it. I'm not here to tell anybody that they're wrong. You know, put on your pizza, whatever makes you happy. But for me, like the sweetness of a fruit on a pizza, like it to me, it does, you know, it kind of loses that connection, but that's just one man's opinion. I will never tell anybody what they should or should not do with their pizza.
Nice. You're a you do you, boo, pizza guy. Just
that's
mind the
exactly
fold.
Right. Right. Don't tell me what I'm going to do.
That.
You know, like I'm going to do my own thing. So you do yours.
Heck yeah. All right. Let's get into a little more the professional side here so we can glean from you everything we can.
Yep.
I had heard you in an interview speak to, you know, you were a Googler, one of the originals, and you talked about their rigorous interview process. If you wouldn't mind taking us through that interview process, what you learned going through that process, and you went through it successfully, you got hired, and what you keep with you today from that process.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, when I was interviewing for Google, it was back in 2004 in the New York office, which, you know, there are only, you know, maybe 200 people in the New York office at Google at that time. And I was interviewing for, you know, kind of an inside sales job. And, you know, I always knew I wanted to be in marketing, and this was kind of like the get started into that marketing world was, you know, being on the sales, you know, part of the organization. And so, you know, the interview process took, you know, months. It was very long and drawn out, lots of different questions and work. But what really stood out for me was I went into an interview and one of the, you know, the sales leaders there basically said like, okay, here, we're going to do a couple of different activities. And I was like, okay. And he was like, first, I want you to look around the room and I want you to tell me how many basketballs you think could fill up this room, like from floor to ceiling, wall to wall, how many basketballs fit in this room? And I immediately like sweat pouring. I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like I'm looking around trying to measure in my head, but like, I, you know, come up with an answer and I give it to him and he just doesn't say anything. And then he says, okay, well, you know, how many Dunkin' Donuts do you think are in New York City? And I was like, you know, and again, like, so in my mind, I was, you know, I went to this place where I was like, I don't know, I think there's probably a Dunkin' Donuts like every two blocks. If I figure like, I don't know, 125-ish blocks times 10 avenues, like, I mean, so I did the math in my head and gave him a number. And so, you know, he was like, okay, good. He's like, both of those you answered correctly. I was like, oh, I know the number of Dunkin' Donuts in New York City. He's like, no, you don't. Like, I don't even know the number. But what I wanted to do is understand your thought process. And so you had a logical thought process of trying to calculate it. The next step in that was, he's like, I have a bunch of index cards and I want you to tell me a story and I'm going to throw down an index card with a word on it. And in your very next sentence, you have to include that word. So we went through this process where I'm telling the story and I remember it. Like I'm walking through the woods and, you know, I saw Jerry Seinfeld and, you know, we ran into a Tyrannosaurus Rex on the way to an Ohio State football game, like all of these things, because he's an Ohio State guy and he kept throwing down these cards. And I was like, again, like, what is this? And he's like, I want to see how well you think on your feet. So it was kind of a combination of all of these things where like after an hour, like I'm sweaty, I'm
petrified. Oh, I can't even imagine.
But what I've taken from that, I don't do the index card question, but I do often ask a question around like how many Starbucks there may be, how many basketballs or something else would fit in a room, because I kind of like that idea of like, I just want to see how someone thinks. And I've interviewed people before who have just been like, I don't know. And, you know, again, like that stands out to me as like, you're not even giving it that thought of trying to come up with an answer. So it's not necessarily a make it or break it question for me, but kind of something that I've just used to kind of just dive a little deeper into someone's head.
That's great. So even starting at Google, you were there in the beginning and you went from, I believe, and correct me where I'm wrong, you're at a startup and they kind of decided to go a different way with their business. Did you identify Google at that time, or was this 03, 04, where you're like, ooh, that is a company I want to be involved in? How did the process come about where you tabbed interviewing with Google?
Yeah, you know, I mean, here it is back to 2003, 2004. And while everyone knew Google, like the search engine, it wasn't like the Google we know today.
We hardly knew what a search engine was.
Right, yeah, I mean, Gmail didn't exist. you know, like Google.
I was a dog pile guy in the beginning.
You know, and so like it's, I knew like, you know, yeah, I knew the company. It sounded cool. Like I saw they had openings. So I applied, you know, online, just, you know, thinking like, man, this would be cool. And what they're doing aligns with what I want to do. There was nothing, you know, I was way too immature and young to think like, this is Google. Like, what would this mean for like my professional growth and my, you know, stock options or equity? Like I was just thinking like, I want a good job. And that's what it was. And it was an amazing job, you know, for 7 years. Like I loved everything about it. And leaving Google was one of the hardest decisions I ever made. But like, I have absolutely no regrets about my time there.
And I want to come back to that. I have a couple questions about, you're such a good example of being intentional about your personal growth and your career. But I want to talk for a minute about the sales part of what you were selling at Google. I imagine at that time, AdWords and the different functionality and abilities of what you were selling were somewhat of a foreign concept, or at the very least a new concept to those you were approaching. And I fast forward thinking about what you're doing with Flock Freight now. What are some lessons learned in helping people's mind begin to visualize and adopt something they didn't even know 30 seconds before they started talking to you was possible or existed?
You know, it was definitely a learning experience for me, you know, on that side is whether I knew it or not, I was learning very quickly about the idea of consultative selling. I was learning about the idea of, it's not a matter of what I have to offer. It's really important for me to make the connection as to why it's important for you. And that's part of what I do today. I mean, that's my world. And so back then it was calling companies and, you know, sometimes you just need to reframe the question, because AdWords was such a new thing. And there were a lot of companies, both big Fortune 500s and small mom and pops, that had different reasons why AdWords just didn't sound like a good idea to them. And when you reframed it as, you know, hey, look, if you had $50 and you could walk into a room and say, I have $50. I'm looking to sell something that's worth $500, but I'm only going to give this $50 to someone who's probably likely to buy that. And you just ask the question like, hey, who's interested? And some guy raises his hand and says, yeah, I want that. You're willing to give that guy your $50. You're not going to give it to anybody else. And people will be like, yeah, that makes sense. I'm like, well, that's what you're doing with AdWords. You're only paying for people who are raising their hand, AKA clicking on your ad, to go to your website. So it's not this big expense of, you know, trying to appeal to the masses. You're being targeted to find those that raise their hand. And so that concept, like that's what yielded success for me. And that's something that I've brought with me everywhere I've gone in my professional career, is to really understand that there are a lot of different stages of marketing that, you know, until you get to the point where you're running a Super Bowl ad, you know, like you have to be more targeted in your, you know, marketing budgets and your tactics, because that's what yields results.
So what I'm hearing there, which is, this is awesome, is that really sales and marketing, hearing you use that illustration or that story, is that kind of what you mean by sometimes how you frame it up, or you got to reframe it as you're just telling a story?
Both sales and marketing are storytelling, you know. In sales, you're telling it usually on a more one-to-one basis, because you get someone on the phone or you're in person in a meeting. Marketing is, how do you tell that story to a much larger audience to then get them to say, you know what, like, I want to learn even more. I want to dig even deeper, in which case then you make the introduction to sales. And so that's why a sales and marketing partnership is so vital in an organization. They can't be siloed. Because if you have a marketing org saying, this is our message, this is our story, this is our benefit, and the sales guy gets on the phone and doesn't kind of come up behind with that same message and kind of really drive it home, you're completely disconnected. So yeah, sales and marketing go hand in hand. And if they're not, then you have issues for sure.
Oh, 100%. I see that all too often. I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir here, but it's a joint opportunity to go forward and tell that story. So
yep.
Everyone in the organization's connected, telling the same story. It's like clashing cymbals when you hear, you know, sales guy saying one thing and marketing another. how do you avoid, you know, this is something that comes up in specifically freight tech a lot. How do you avoid when you're framing up an offering, getting too focused on features purely and just presenting features? How do you, or how do you speak to your team about not going down that path?
It's always a challenge because you want, I mean, I'm proud of where I work. I love what we're doing. It's unique. It's special. Like, I want to tell everyone, here's what we do and why, and like, this is how, and, you know, but that doesn't resonate. It's kind of that idea of consultative selling, going out and telling everyone what I do or what we do and the features that we have means very little to that individual or that organization. What works is when you talk about, you know, not the features, but the benefits. You know, start with how, you know, not the what you do and the details, but the impact that it can have. If you talk to a, you know, if we talk to a shipper and say, hey, I'd like to uncover, like, what happens when you have 6 pallets that need to get moved? How are you typically shipping that? And they tell you their story and you ask more questions like, you know, what is the biggest challenge you're facing? You know, and then you can talk about how we have a solution or something else. But if you kind of just start a conversation with a shipper of, hey, let me tell you what we do, you know, they've heard that. Like, as soon as you start with, let me tell you what we do, they tune out because they're used to everybody telling them how what you do is different and unique and better. And it's all about solving a business need for someone else. That's what we're in the business to do. We are solving the needs of someone, whether they know they have that need or they don't know. And that's also part of my job.
That's great. I think that's the perfect way to look at it. We all have this selfishness just in us, right? We're just human.
Exactly.
So that's a really good way to look at it.
The easiest thing to talk, it's easy to talk about your company, your product, your solution, because you know it. You know, and it's not always easy. And I was certainly guilty of this as a young salesperson of, you know, it's uncomfortable to ask questions about somebody else's business, you know, to ask someone, what is the challenge that you're facing? Like, that's a tough question for some, you know, for some people to ask, because you're asking someone to admit a shortcoming that they have in their business. But it's an essential one, because you can't solve a problem or an unmet need until you know what it is.
Yes, what I like, what I hear you saying there that I think is clutch, the way you put it, is essentially the answers we seek, not to try to sound dramatic, but a lot of the good stuff lies on the other side of our comfort level, right?
Yes.
So uncomfortable questions, or maybe not uncomfortable, maybe uncomfortable to us, right? And really putting ourselves out there and going into that unknown. One last Google question. What was it like going to Brazil and opening up an office, a new branch of the business? I imagine that has to be an experience you draw on often.
It is. And, you know, I loved my time there. You know, the office in Brazil had opened, you know, a few months prior. It was staffed up, but they didn't have, and mostly on the engineering front and other things, but they had a sales team and, you know, they didn't have a sales leader. And so I applied to go down there. And again, like, it was, you know, an internal application process. I had to write an essay, which, you know, you would have thought, like, after high school, like, your days of writing essays were over.
Yeah.
On why I wanted to go and what it would mean. And so I went down there, and worked with the newly hired sales leader to kind of teach, you know, what it is that we do, you know, we're doing in the States that worked well for us in terms of consultative selling, how to ask the right questions, objection handling techniques, you know, really just helping this very young, you know, sales team, you know, that was, you know, I think there were only maybe about 6 people, help set them up for success so that they were calling on all of the different companies in Latin America to help them, you know, with their marketing efforts and get the, you know, what they needed. And my time there, while, you know, short, I have, you know, lasting friendships from there, people that I speak to, you know, quite often. But what I really learned was, talk about being outside your comfort zone. Here I am, I speak only English. I do speak a little Spanish, but in Brazil, they speak Portuguese. And so when these, you know, individuals were having their sales calls, it's all in Portuguese. So I couldn't listen on the sales call and then like come back to them with feedback and say, oh, I would have asked the question different. So it had to be about how do I build trust very quickly so that they're willing to say to me, you know what, here's what I said and here's what they told me. I don't think I did this well. How would you have done it different? So it needed to be them coming to me, the salespeople at Google saying to me, I need your help. I didn't do this well because I couldn't just listen on my own.
And that's a lot of trust.
That's exactly it. And so that was me talking to them and showing them like, I'm vulnerable. I'm not perfect. Like I've made these mistakes. I shared with them some of my worst sales call stories because I want them to see like there's a human behind this. It's not machines. And failing is okay if you pull yourself up and try again. And so building that trust very quickly was really important because I only had, you know, limited time there. I couldn't wait, you know, 3 months for them to trust me. It needed to happen immediately.
Yeah, that's such a good way to look at it. Really start so much pivots off that trust in any relationship. Mm-hmm. So I had mentioned we'd come back to this. I really appreciate how intentional you've been with your, you know, we'll call it ownership of career and having a personal vision for yourself and your career of what skills and experiences you want to go out and get. I'd like to talk about that because I think we can learn a lot from you there. So let me back up in that. Do you start to formulate a vision and a path of, hey, I want to get these skills, these experiences, do this, or it's you just come to certain checkpoints and then kind of inherently know, okay, I need to go look elsewhere to get my next step?
Yeah, I think it became a little bit more organic in that like I would reach points, you know, so after 7 years at Google, like I loved it. I mean, the perks, everyone talks about it, world class. I mean, I was eating, you know, lobster risotto for lunch, you know, 3 times a week. Like I could not complain at all. But I also felt that, you know, whether I was right or wrong, that like, you know, I could continue to have a great job at Google for a long time. But what I wanted to do was kind of figure out my career. And as a salesperson at Google, like a lot of the conversations we started to have as we expanded and got bigger was with marketing agencies, talking to them about budget allocation. You know, if their client gave them $10 million, like what percent are they allocating to search, to display ads, to video, to other elements of digital marketing? And I wanted to understand that better. You know, like I could ask agencies all day long, but like I wanted to live that world. And so I met someone who, you know, had built a marketing agency. They were, you know, relatively small and really focused only on SEO, and they were looking to kind of grow into more complete digital marketing. And through my conversations with her, she said, look, I'd really love for you to, if you're willing to leave Google, like I'd love for you to join us and kind of help lead us in that, you know, becoming a more full service digital marketing agency. And, you know, I thought, yeah, like this aligns with how I'm going to learn. And so I did. And you know, I spent the next couple of years building out that agency and really understanding in more detail, you know, kind of what it means to think about budget allocation, like how are decisions made? How are, you know, all these different elements tracked? Like what are the expectations of a client? And understanding the clients and the customer, you know, the agency clients, that's what led me to thinking, all right, now I need a job in like corporate marketing world. Because now I've been on the media side, I've been in the agency side. Now I want to be corporate marketing because I really want to understand that world. And then, you know, kind of see how all of these elements play together. And so right around this time is Hurricane Sandy comes through, like completely messes up life, you know, in New York. My wife had lived in San Diego previously and had been in my ear since the day we met saying we should move to San Diego.
Sure. It's an amazing city.
Yeah. And I was always like, why would you ever want to leave New York? This place is amazing. But, you know, after Hurricane Sandy, we finally said, I was like, you know what? I'll consider it. I have to find a job, but, you know, I'll consider it. so I went on LinkedIn and of course the usual things. And I actually found, you know, a woman who was a client at, when I was at the agency, she had taken a new job as the, you know, VP of, you know, e-commerce at Cricket Wireless, a company that I had never heard of because I'm an East Coaster and Cricket was really, you know, predominantly Southwest at that time. And sure. I reached out to her just saying like, hey, if you know of anything, I'm considering a move. And she wrote back immediately and was like, we need to talk. And I got on the phone with her and she's like, I'm building out a team. I need someone to lead all of our digital marketing efforts. You know, how quickly can you get on a plane to come out here and talk to me? So here I was, like, this was kind of like November, whatever it is of that year. I told my family, you know, we'll probably move, but like it may take a year and whatever it is. Well, 6 weeks later, like I had a job in San Diego and was pretty much getting ready to move. But so that's what got me started in, you know, kind of the corporate marketing world.
Oh, wow. So right there, we're seeing convergence of organic opportunity. Then there's some intentional going after change and new experiences. That's really cool. So that brings me to, and I want to get the title right, a book you wrote, The Power of Relationships and Professional Growth. And to me, that's a perfect segue into it, because when I hear that title, that is what you're talking about. It's what you wrote about in action. This relationship, this networking you had clearly done over the years, and now you leveraged that and got a position in San Diego. What is that book about and what made you want to write it?
It's all the things I wish someone had taught me. I was naive in thinking like if you're connected with someone on LinkedIn, like they are your advocate and your supporter and like they will go to bat for you or help you. And that's not necessarily true. I mean, there are some great people on LinkedIn, don't get me wrong. But it does, just because you're connected on LinkedIn. I mean, I'm connected with thousands of people on LinkedIn, and I can honestly tell you, I could not pick 98% of them out of a lineup. But that's just, that's the nature of what it is. And so the book was really, you know, the things that I've learned along the way, like the importance of kind of creating an inner circle, you know, those people who will talk about you even when you're not in the room. So, you know, for example, if there's a, you know, three people sitting at a coffee table, you know, coffee shop having a conversation, and one of them says like, oh yeah, you know, our marketing efforts are, you know, are terrible. And, you know, we really need to up level that. Someone there who's like, don't look any further. I know the guy for you, you know, and if he's not the guy, like he will know someone who can help you, you know? So it's how do you build that? And it's looking at today's world and saying like, yep, just because, you know, I may send you a LinkedIn message or like something that you do or whatever, again, doesn't make you part of my inner circle. Like it takes effort. It takes time. Like it takes commitment, you know? So it's kind of like when I think about like all the courses and classes I wish I learned, you know, they had in college that they just didn't, because college is all about like biology, sociology, not like how to maintain a good credit score and, you know, how to build, you know, quality relationships. Like that's kind of what it was meant to be for me. So the audience was really young professionals, either, you know, recent college graduates or, you know, to understand that building a professional relationship is possibly one of the most important things that you will do. And it can't be something that you kind of casually go into expecting it to yield results for you. It takes effort. It takes time. And it's worthwhile, you know, may not be worthwhile today, but you never know 6 years from now when that conversation may yield something positive for you.
Yeah. I like how you put that building, because that, you know, gets the imagination of like, okay, there's work involved. I have to bring materials to this. It is a building effort. It's for not sure. Instant or overnight or something that's just, like you say, casual. What was that process of writing a book? Like, take us through that. That seems like in my head, that's such a cool thing you did. But if I look at, you know, for so many of us, looking at a blank piece of paper is very daunting.
It wasn't easy. I can't say I will do it again, although I never would have said I would have done it in the first place. So who knows? You know, what was interesting about it is, you know, so this was it was before my second kid was born. And, you know, it was over the summer. And my wife went back east to visit her family in Maine and to visit some friends in Ohio. And she brought, you know, our son with her. You know, I was working and she just had more vacation time than I did. And so I was kind of, you know, flying solo for, you know, a couple of weeks, you know, that summer. And there's only so much TV, like I could just sit down and watch, like when she's not here. And, you know, so for whatever reason, like I thought I would write an article. I've contributed to, you know, online publications in the past, you know, and writing about marketing things. So I thought, like, I'll craft like an article, which I could, you know, send to, you know, any numerous, you know, outlet. And when I started kind of with an outline and thinking through it, like, you know, all of a sudden I was like, all right, I have a lot of words, like this is not an article. So now I have two choices. Do I like try to strip it down and make it an article? Do I break it into a couple of different articles? Or do I just keep going and have this become something bigger? And so that's what happened. Like it took a long time to kind of finish it and put the finishing touches on it. Then of course I'm met with like, okay, like I wrote a book. It sounds good in my head. Like I had to go find, you know, editors and, you know, all sorts of different people. And of course, thank goodness the internet, you know, you can get connected with amazing people. And I'm doing all of this while I haven't told my wife any of it. So she comes back, you know, and I'm still working on it, you know, kind of somewhat secretively. And, you know, and so one night we're out for dinner and, you know, I said, I'm like, look, just so you know, like over the last 3 months, like I've been writing a book. And she was like, what are you talking about? And I gave her like, you know, the, you know, printed computer paper, you know, manuscript, I don't know, you know, draft. And, you know, she kind of gave me this look of like, what is this? And I was like, well, you were gone. Like I needed something to do. And so that's where it all came from. And, you know, so it probably took in total, you know, maybe about 6 months, long process, expensive process, you know, hiring talented editors to proofread and edit and comment, like that's pricey. But man, like it's such a worthwhile experience. Cause I look back at it now and I'm like, you know, again, like I'm not an author. I don't want to, you know, kind of claim to be some expert, but like, this is my life. This is what I wish I knew. And if this could help one person with their growth and their understanding, then I've done my job.
Hearing the background behind it, that makes so much sense of how it's put together. And I like that it wasn't too long or too short. It's just enough for someone to consume and then apply. What would be some advice from that book then so we have a lot of young professionals, specifically many of them in the freight, logistics, and transportation world? What would be some practical advice from that book that you'd give a young professional in our world to leverage, especially during this time where maybe we can't go to a conference and bump into different people? We got to put ourselves out there a little more. What could you share with us?
I'd share with them to buy the book. No, you know, I think,
hey, it's all in there. I mean, yeah,
it's all in there. No, I mean, they could buy the book. They would be like the fifth person to buy it. That's how, you know, I think for me, what really continues to be so important to me and what I think about all the time is effort in relationships. It's weird in the sense of like everything we do is, you know, technological and online, and so easy to just comment on Facebook or whatever it is. It's so easy to even send a text message. But for your inner circle that you want to create, you know, for those who, you know, again, like don't look at someone and say like, how are they going to benefit me? Cause that's wrong. But look at people who are challenge you. You know, it's not about finding like-minded people. It's about finding those who will in some way make you better because they see things different or because they have experience that you don't. But when you meet those people, like be open with them and say, you know, talk about mentors. And, you know, it's there's nothing wrong with saying to someone who has experience that you're hoping to gain, you know, hey, I look at what you've done. You know, I'm really fascinated by it. Like, I would love to be able to have a conversation with you, talk to you more about your experience and learn from what you've accomplished, mistakes you may have made. Like, I want to learn that. And I'd like to consider you a mentor. That means that not only having those conversations, but following through, having phone calls or Zooms as we're doing kind of every day now. Those are the things that are so important. It can't just be, I'm going to shoot you a text or comment on your LinkedIn every once in a while and expect you to remember me and who I am when you are having coffee with somebody, you know, 6 months from now, and they say, hey, do you know anyone who does this, this, or that? So it's how do you build and foster relationships of those people who will inevitably make you better, but who you're not asking them like, hey, you hire me or do this. Like, it's just challenge me to be better than I am today, to learn, to grow, to get out of my comfort zone. Like, those are the types of people you want surrounding you, because that's going to make you better.
I really appreciate how you put that and call it fostering those relationships. I think the perfect description. What would be advice then for this young professional? We may feel a little bit intimidated to reach out to some of these titans in our industry. What is something that a young professional could offer, so it doesn't just feel like, you know, asking and taking? What's something on the front end of value that the average young pro can offer?
I think there are people in this world, I like to consider myself one of them, that want to give back, that don't have an expectation of getting something in return other than the feeling, like just that, you know, I don't know, it's just a feel good for me when I can, you know, have a conversation with someone, talk to them, help them with their career and whatever. I'm not really looking for anything back. It's also why, like, I literally have given away more copies of my book than I have sold, because, like, I want that to be something that someone can read and take something from it. Even if, I mean, again, I didn't write it to make money, you know, like, let's be clear. Like, I have lost more money than I have made with this book. And I'm really okay with that, because if it helps someone, that is worth it for me. And so if you're a young professional who's looking for a mentor, someone that you can partner with or have those conversations, if they're looking to you to gain something out of it, it's not going to work. But if they're looking at it as, you know what, like, they want to give back to someone who's where they probably once were, and they want to help someone in their careers, because giving back is so important. And it's giving back of time. It's not a financial give back. It's, I'm willing to give you my time because it's so important and valuable. Then those are the people you want to have those connections with anyway.
You bring up a good point, how you didn't write the book per se with financial gain in end. Do you feel that personally you benefited and kind of crystallized some of those truths that you were the one that wrote it, but did you find that it actually helped you, you know, be able to apply those lessons better?
Yeah, for sure. It's amazing how, like, when you take your inner workings of your brain and you put it on paper, and then you read it back to yourself hundreds of times, because that's what you do when you're writing a book, you see things that pop out at you. You're like, wow, you know what? Like, I wrote about this concept and this concept, but there's actually, like, crossover here. Like, they connect in some way. And so you identify those things, like, as you're writing them and reading it back to yourself. And that happened, you know, a few times. Like, you know, again, it's all about understanding. And for me, it was just like the reinforcement of the idea. And I talk about it, it's probably the most common phrase in the book is inner circle, you know, and what that really means. And so I kept, you know, I always talked about, like, yeah, you know, have a group of close people and close, you know, but it's then the idea of what that means and what that really especially means when you're not in the room. What does that mean, you know, when they're having conversations with others? What does that mean in opportunities for new careers, you know, and new things? Like, it's tying all these different elements together. And that also means effort. It means time. It means engagement. It means offering your services or your, you know, being a sounding board for them as well. It can't be a one-way street. You know, just because they're part of your inner circle doesn't mean you're expecting things from them. They have to expect things from you as well. So it's reciprocal in that nature. So kind of tied all of these different threads together, which now I look at relationships differently.
Was it scary to create something that intimate and then put it out there?
I don't know if scary is the right word, but I don't know. It's weird. You know, like, just like right now, like, I feel weird talking about myself this much. Like, here we are, you know, 50 minutes in, and just talking about me is uncomfortable in a lot of ways. You know, here, this is a book about, like, you know, my feelings on relationships and professional growth. And there are, I'm sure, many people who will read this book and completely disagree with everything I said and think that what I have in there is, you know, just a bunch of crap. Thankfully, no one's told me that yet, but like, I'm sure that that is truth. And so like, it's kind of weird to think about it. Like it's, you know, how do you get across this idea of like, this is my experience and my experience only, and you may disagree, but I don't know. Like it's weird to have that idea that like, this is my inner thoughts, like my experiences, and someone may pick up that book, read it, and just think I'm completely full of it. And that's okay. It's just weird. It's an uneasy feeling at times, but at the same time, like, I'm so glad that I did it. I would not go back and change anything.
I'm with you. The personal branding, creating, putting things out there, it is this balance in my head of some uneasiness at times of like, why should people care about this? So what advice would you give? Because I hear that from different people of why they don't put more out there, or why they don't build, we'll call it a personal brand as much, because they feel like, why should people care? Why should I be talking about myself or drawing attention to myself? I can empathize with that. But what advice would you give to someone to strike a balance there?
That's probably the hardest thing to really identify and to execute upon. I struggle with it to this day. You asked me to have this conversation, and you know, I have a lot of respect for you, so of course I'm willing and happy to do it. I know that this, you know, inevitably is to talk about what we're doing at Flock Freight and all those things, but it's a balance game, you know, like how do you promote yourself and your accomplishments without sounding boastful and egotistic? And, you know, how do you also make the conversation, even when someone's talking about you, but pivoting to others around you? I mean, I could sit here all day long and tell you all of the accomplishments that I have had in my life, in my professional career. There were other people who were part of that. You know, it is a, you know, it's team efforts. My team now at Flock Freight is probably the best marketing team that I've ever worked with. We are a small, fierce team, and everything that happens like is a result of the collective us. It's understanding and appreciating those things. It's okay to do self-promotion. It's okay to brand yourself, and you want to be thought of as an expert or a leader in a space, and that's good. You should go for that. But it's also important to remember you're not alone. And anybody who talks about, I did this, I did that, it was me, they're missing the point. Because if I'm going to hire someone on my, you know, for a role on my team, a senior person, and I ask them to talk about their personal brand, and it's always about them and they and whatever it is, and not the we, the how they led a team and collectively did things, they're probably not the right fit for me. You know, I want someone who has a personal brand, but their brand is also one of collaboration, of teamwork, of partnership, you know, of humility. I don't want someone who wants to, you know, stand on top of the mountain and take credit for everybody else's hard work too. So building a personal brand is important, but there is a balance between, you know, boastful look at me and just trying to create and show your experiences.
Very, very well said. I really enjoyed that. So then let's spend this last couple minutes of this interview then talking. Let's enough of you.
Thank you.
No, not at all. But your team, to your point, your current team, and I'm sure throughout your career, you've worked with so many great individuals and teams. So I'm going to tell you my observation about the Flock Freight team, what little I do know as an outsider. You correct me where I'm wrong here.
Sure.
But something that watching Flock Freight that really struck me, and as I've gotten to know a few, especially the folks on the freight side, you know, the Kevin McMasters and the Justin Turners, real freight guys.
Freight guys.
But then there's other people like yourself that are new to the freight industry, and the team is both kind of in incumbent freight people and then new ones, and yet speaking the same language and seem in unity of, I hate the term go to market, but just because I can't think of a clearer way to say it. the messaging, we'll say, that's presented out from the freight folks and from you and your team, it's a joint message. How the heck do you do that? That doesn't happen out in the wild.
It goes back to collaboration and teamwork. I, you know, like you said, I'm not a freight guy. when I started at Flock Freight, like I had no idea what the difference between LTL and truckload is. I couldn't for the life of me understand anything as it related to freight. You know, I understood the parcel world only because I know what it takes to get a package from San Diego to New York, but that was the extent of my education. You know, for me, it was, you know, a lot of learning and very rapidly understanding like the general landscape. But, you know, it's really important as I've gotten, you know, I've been with the company for over a year now, but as we've continued to evolve is having those amazing partnerships within the company where I can be vulnerable and I can go to Kevin McMaster or Justin Turner or Oren, you know, our CEO and say, I don't understand this. Why would X, Y, and Z happen in this scenario? Or why is this better than that? And have them not look at me of like, man, like how do you have a job here? But look at me and say, let me explain it to you because you, the leader of the marketing org, it is so vital that you get that so that your team can then learn that from you and you all collectively know it. So, you know, it's partnerships, it's understanding and collaboratively communicating with the rest of the org. And it still happens to this day. I mean, I'm a year plus in and there are times where Oren will, you know, call me or say to me, like, hey man, you're the only one that calls it, you know, partial truckload. Like they're partials. We talk about it in the, you know, industry, it's just partials. And I'm like, all right, cool, man. Thanks. Like that helps me. And so it's, I want to learn, I want to grow, I want to understand all of those elements, and learning from such experienced freight guys helps me. And it also ties into the other side, which as I'm putting out marketing messaging, yes, I can make the assumption that anybody who's like a senior logistics person at a Fortune 5000 company speaks freight, they may not speak it the same way that a Justin and Kevin who have been in freight their whole lives might speak it. So I'm trying to balance, you know, that, as you said, the go-to-market language, that how do we get our brand, how do we get our terminology to resonate with someone who may be in freight and logistics and supply chain, but is also in some ways a consumer of our product. And so the language needs to be a little bit different for them than it would if you're talking to, you know, a carrier, for example. So it's all about finding that balance of who the message is for, who's the audience, and how do you position it? And that's where Justin and Kevin will come to me sometimes and say, hey, say this. And I'm like, oh, no. Like, I can't say that. Here's how I would do it differently. And they're like, oh, yeah, no, that makes sense. Like, let's do it that way too.
So a lot of trust and collaboration is what I'm hearing there.
Yeah, for sure.
That's legit. And the messaging, the wording, you know, the way we tell the story, it matters as we've been talking. That's a main thread I've really learned from you here as we're talking. I got to ask real granular. The term shared truckload is one that was new to me. Is that something the team came up with together? Because I've noticed that's been in the messaging now, and it helps my brain understand what you're doing there a little better. I love that term.
Yeah, I'm probably spilling beans here and, you know, other things, but the concept has always been there. I mean, you talk about consolidators, and that's what they're doing. They're sharing a truck with multiple shipments. But as we've tried to explain and, you know, in detail what Flock Direct, the product is, that you get to purchase that share of a truckload at point of sale. So you say, I have 4 pallets. I want to move it from San Diego to New York. I don't want to do LTL. It's going to take forever. It's going to get loaded and unloaded 12 times. I'm going to get damaged. We said, yeah, with Flock Direct, you get truckload service, but for your LTL freight, how do we kind of bring that together? What's the term? And so we thought about it as a marketing team, and we're like, you know what? It's shared truckload. You're sharing truckload quality service. So the concepts have always been there. They've always existed. The terminology is certainly something that we've aimed to kind of really continue to promote because it's so descriptive of what we actually do.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a good lesson for all of us, and whatever we're messaging, whether it be something from ourselves or a product or an offering, to the messaging, the words matter. Words have meaning.
And that's
and
it.
The simplicity is beautiful.
Simplicity, you know, like if you say to someone like, oh, shared truckload, even if they've never heard of us, don't know what it is, in their mind, they can envision what that is. And that's what we're really going for is, now, you know, obviously we hope that they Google shared truckload and see that Flock Freight is kind of a leader in that space. But that's the idea, is to get the thought of, hey, I've never heard of this, or this sounds interesting, I want to learn more. And so when you say Flock Direct, those who don't know who we are, that may not resonate, but shared truckload certainly will.
All right, one last team-related question, and then we'll give you the final word there. Explain to me what All In. It's something I've heard the Flock Freight team say out there. Everyone seems to be connected in. What does All In mean to you?
It's a mentality. It really is. You know, it means that, you know, we are giving everything we have to the success of this business. And, you know, I live and breathe it every single day. And, you know, it means, you know, not taking shortcuts. It means that we're collaborative. It means that we give feedback. You know, like if I can help make someone better by sharing feedback with them, like I'm going to do that. And I expect them to do that for me. I want someone to pull me aside and say, hey, I think there's a better way you could have done this. Let's talk about it. You know, that's part of that all-in approach, that all-in mentality that says we're together. We're in this together. We're locked arm in arm. We have the strategy set forth for us. We know what we're in this for, and we're going to give it everything we have, both our blood, sweat, and tears, you know, and the effort. And that means we're all in for each other as well.
Yeah, now I'm ready to go run through a wall.
That's exactly it.
That's so great. Something we can all emulate, whatever we're personally trying to attack right now or get after. So thank you for sharing that.
Our CEO would tell you, if you're not all in, like then you're not there. You know, like if you're not willing to give it everything you have, then like this just may not be the place for you. And I get that. And I totally respect that. Like his expectation, and certainly my expectation of my team, is if you're willing to give 100% of yourself and put it all on the line, I want you on my team. I want you by my side. If you're kind of only half in, half out, or you're kind of just depth, like it's just not the place for you. We work hard. We work fast. We're a startup. Like, you know, we make very fast decisions. We go. There's no slow time and slow period where we get to kind of kick back a little. Like we are go at 100 miles an hour every moment of every day. And I need the people around me and the rest of the team to really, you know, embrace that.
That's something we could all learn from. If we're not all in on whatever given task or job or what we're going after in our personal life, then I think it's a reason to pause and think, okay, what am I doing here? And then what will I go all in on? And then go after that.
That's exactly it. You got it.
I really appreciate that. And Jeff, I appreciate the time and everything you shared with us. I'd like to give you the final word. Where can people find you and interact with you, learn from you, and any last message you'd like to leave with the people?
They can find me in this house that I haven't been able to leave in 6 months. But they can certainly find me on LinkedIn, visit us at flockfreight.com, learn more about what we're doing in the shared truckload space. My ending is really simple, you know, and to your point, and Jamin, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun. Albeit awkward at times talking about myself, but I guess I'll leave with, start with what I've done is I've always sat down and I've thought, and I've in a lot of cases written down what it is that I want to accomplish. What are my goals, personal goals, professional goals? What are the things that are so important to me? By doing that, like it allows me, as I review that, similar to the book, allows me to then look back and say, you know what, no, this was not right, and cross it off and come up with something new. But then it allowed me to make decisions based on what I put down as goals. And it gave me a sense of structure, which I needed. Otherwise, I might have just kind of, you know, been all over the place. But it gave me a direction. It gave me a path. And it's yielded some great results for me personally. I guess my closing is know what you want. Know what you want and work your ass off to get it. Don't let anything stop you from achieving what you want to achieve. Just know what it is and go for it. And when you fail, and you inevitably will fail, dust yourself off, get up, and keep going.
I dig it. I really dig it. And, you know, I'll say the other thing I learned from you this episode, go surround yourself with ride or dies like your wife who will be happy for you, even when your team beats their team.
Yes. That is very true as well.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jeff. And Freight Friendos, until next time, you can find me on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter. Let's chat and connect. I really appreciate all the comments and feedback, because what I'm all in on is making a success of this podcast to bring you the most value, the people that are sharing the most, whose mindset we can really adopt so that we can get that adapt and thrive mindset. Appreciate all of you. Beccarisi. Bye.
Woo! I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I just love learning from people's mindsets. Well, if you enjoyed it, please like, comment, share, all that good stuff. And hey, sincerely, if there was something you didn't enjoy or think we can do to improve, and by we, I mean me, please let me know. I truly value your feedback and am so grateful that you listened. Until next time, Beccarisi. Rolling on dubs.